and welcome to Responsa Radio, where you ask and we answer questions of Jewish law in modern times. I am Rabbi Avi Killip, and I am here with Rabbi Ethan Tucker, Rosh Yeshiva of Machon Hadar, a center for higher Jewish learning based in New York City. So this question falls into a category of, what are the Shabbat ramifications of banking in the 21st century? Here we go. They write, I'm a forgetful person, so automatic bill pay and direct deposit make my life a lot easier. Using these systems, money is credited to or taken from my bank account each month on the same day of the month. This means that credits or debits sometimes occur on Shabbat. Is that a problem? And there's a secondary question here, which is, what about a non-observant friend sending me money on Shabbat using Venmo or PayPal? So it sounds like there's two different questions here. One is, can I have the direct deposit pull from my account on Shabbat? And the other is, what happens if somebody gave me money on Shabbat? So there's an outgoing and a receiving.
Yeah. Great, really interesting question. And these are the things that kind of go on now more and more behind the scenes. We're not even thinking about it. I realized when I got this question, yeah, I have all sorts of credits and debits that are set for the first of the month, and I had never thought about it at all. So this is very much a current question. So, all right, as you said, there's two parts of this, right? And there's the sort of outgoing and the incoming. So let's talk first about the outgoing, what it means to set up this kind of regime where your money is being sent out to someone else on Shabbat. Okay, so this idea of having stuff or even money, but things of value that you owe to someone else, and perhaps it's convenient for them to come and get them on Shabbat, is not new. This kind of automated banking may be new, but that kind of arrangement, financial arrangement, is not new. You already have the Mishnah in Tractate Shabbat talking about potentially giving a Gentile clothing to wash and perhaps other goods that, you know, he's expecting to take from you right up in the minutes before Shabbat, and it being okay, according to Beit Hillel's view, to give them to them, even if that means they're going to end up taking them out of your home and taking them out of the city on Shabbat. And sort of as long as you have not done anything problematic on Shabbat itself, it's okay. And as an extension of that, the Rav Moshe Isserles in the Shulchan Aruch says, there are some who even permit a Gentile to come on Shabbat and to pick up a parcel or a package or some kind of valuable that has been designated for them that they are owed, as long as it was set aside in a designated space right before Shabbat. And the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, then says, but you should be strict about that and not allow it. So you have this sort of recognition that, well, technically, if I, literally the term is yiched lo makom, if I set up a little corner in my house where I put that stuff, and then, you know, I would like the non-Jewish person to come by on Friday, but it's more convenient for them to come by on Saturday morning. Why shouldn't they be able to come by and take it? They're doing it on their own time. But the resistance is, well, this is kind of in your house, and is the propriety of this okay? The Aruch HaShulchan, a later codifier, spells this out, and he says there's really two factors here of why one should be stringent. The first is that actually you can argue in this kind of case, the real acquisition of the object by the Gentile happens when they take the thing out of your house. So even though you've set it aside for them, it's kind of still yours until they've picked it up. And therefore, by allowing the pickup to happen on Shabbat morning, you are essentially facilitating a transaction of something on Shabbat. And he says that's no-no number one. Number two is that anyone looking, the optics of this will be, oh, I just saw that non-Jewish guy go into that guy's house and walk out with something that he bought from him. They must have done a sale on Shabbat. And therefore, you're kind of breaking, it's almost like breaking the zoning or the blue laws, as it were, of the community by having someone in that kind of posture. So that's why the Aruch HaShulchan says we should be strict in the case that the Ramah describes here in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, I think those two factors are useful because I think they argue for why perhaps this case is different and we should be lenient and not concerned. So on the first factor, in the transaction is actually happening on Shabbat, I think there's a strong argument that once you have set up the direct deposit through some kind of contract and through the agreement that you put forward to begin with, actually that transaction is already done. What is then happening is just some kind of actual transfer or moving. But the idea that the Rama is talking about of the removal of the object from the house is the moment where it happens, that strikes me as less clear here, that that's the moment when the financial obligation and transfer has begun, though I could see you making an argument.
In that the money's not really in your house, it's already at the bank, which isn't really, you know, your, it's not like there's a box with your money sitting in it at the bank.
That's right. I think that's right. Meaning this is on some level a set of numbers and a set of arrangements and agreements. And by you as part of that saying, and part of the conditions around my ownership of this money is this guy gets to come and take this amount of money out of my account the first of every month, doesn't have quite the same valence of this is my object. And until that person comes and takes it, it is not theirs. There's something more complex there. The second piece here that he raises, which is the viewer will assume that the transaction is happening. That I think is the most dramatic difference here. There's no viewer. And as I even said to my reaction to this question, I kind of didn't even realize about myself that this was happening right on Shabbat, never mind someone else. So on that front, I think you're super clear in terms of what's going on.
In fact, that's what makes direct deposit so appealing, is that it happens without you having to put any thought into it.
That's exactly right. And I think here another factor which is not mentioned explicitly, but which I think really goes to the heart of this, is in the case described in the Shulchan Aruch, it's really just as possible to insist, no, I'm sorry, you'll have to come pick that up on Friday or on Sunday. And it may be a little annoying or a little inconvenient, but there's unlikely to be major loss. I didn't actually find someone who says this, but I would for sure imagine that in a case of some kind of significant financial loss, a later posek, a later authority would say, well, yeah, you should be strict. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says, but not in a case where there's significant loss, in which case you can certainly rely on the lenient position here, which allowed this practice. And in many cases with this kind of direct deposit or debiting, there are all kinds of either financial penalties or loss of financial incentives that can accrue for not setting up that kind of arrangement. And given the other factors here leading towards leniency, I think it's great that the questioner here was thinking about this. But I think at the end of the day, you can simply set up that kind of recurring regime and not worry about it. So that's what I would say on the outgoing front of these kinds of transfers.
Great. Good to know. So let's ask then about the other direction. And that's a question of receiving payment. And it's interesting to me that this person doesn't say my non-Jewish friend is giving me money through PayPal, but they're saying my potentially Jewish non-observant friend. So I wonder if there's a distinction between those two also.
Yeah. So let's break that down, because I think there's really two elements there. One is whether it's inappropriate for me to be paid on Shabbat, and that really has nothing to do with the identity of the other person. And then I think lurking behind the question is some notion of inappropriate benefit from a transgression that another Jew did on Shabbat, which is not per se about my being paid, but could be applied to any number of things, them having cooked something on Shabbat or any number of things. So I think we have to take those separately. Let's start with being paid. That's not a new question either. Here the Shulchan Aruch also cites a case, it's the Rama again, Rav Moshe Isserles, citing from Sefer Aguda, which is one of the great medieval German compilations. And he gives the following case. Let's say there are Gentiles who owe you grain. You lent them money, let's say, and as part of what they're paying you back in, they're giving you grain, which is their produce. And they come by on Shabbat. And the risk is, if you don't let them in and you don't accept this, they may then move on and maybe you will or won't track them down again. And so this source says something very interesting, which is the Jew gives them the key to the storehouse and they take the key and they put it in there and measure it out and count it, and you are not involved, but you actively facilitate giving them the key. And the idea here is, the permission in this regard is, well, they're kind of doing their own work, the measuring out, all the actual mechanics of the deposit, as it were, is happening by them. And you can even argue that it's not yours in any way until they've completed that process. And by giving them the key, all you're doing is essentially giving them access to a space, which is perfectly legitimate to do on Shabbat.
So that sounds even like a step more active than saying, well, checks show up in my hard snail mail box anyway, sometimes on Saturdays, and that's not a problem. This sounds like it's even a step further than that. I'm opening the door to accept the package maybe from the delivery guy.
Yeah, that's right. So I would say, right, Venmo, I'm not experienced with using it. But I would imagine with any service like that, there is some key, in this case electronic, that you are providing for the person to be able to deposit something into your account. There is some kind of code or some kind of entry that you are giving them. Now here, in this case, it's even better because you're not giving the key on Shabbat, right? You presumably set that up beforehand and then they're able to deposit it in. The Shulchan Aruch's case is even allowing that on Shabbat, you know, at least when it's a physical key, to show the people the way in order to get in there. So I think that's the strong precedent for saying, when there's no other way to do it, again, I think if someone point blank asked you, hey, I'm going to pay you back, do you mind if I do that on Saturday afternoon? I would say to that person, well, you know, I'm Sabbath observant. It would be great if you could do it, you know, on Sunday. But if that's the only time that you can get to it, sure, that's no problem. You know, that's your business. You have the login information and go ahead and do that. But I think you have the strong basis here for when that's the only way for it to be done. And certainly when you didn't think about it or plan it at all and you weren't involved, there's no problem with benefiting from that. Now, the question of the non-observant Jewish depositor and the dimension there of whether I can benefit from a transgression that another Jew does on Shabbat, in this case, an actual transaction of money to me, all kinds of other things that they're doing electronically on the computer, et cetera, that may be inappropriate from a strict reading of Jewish law, that is a much larger question with all kinds of ramifications. I'll say just a local point here, which is in order to be strict around that, it is appropriate to potentially wait for the amount of time that it would take for that to be done after Shabbat. In other words, if a certain action takes an hour to do and the person did it on Shabbat, one might wait after Shabbat is over for an hour before benefiting from the fruits of that forbidden labor. That's a discussion as to whether we even apply that stringency at the end of Shabbat and when we do and when we don't. In this case, it's moot, because a transfer actually takes a millisecond on the computer. And so therefore, even if it's a prohibition that someone did, yeah, to the extent you had a religious conversation and relationship with them, maybe you'd persuade them to do that differently in the future. But no onus falls on you in terms of your responsibility to refrain from benefiting from that money.
Great. Good to know. Glad to know that we can both have our Shabbat and have our direct deposit PayPal too.
Sleep well as your bank account grows and shrinks.
Responsa Radio is a project of the Center for Jewish Law and Values at Machon Hadar and is produced by Jewish Public Media, which creates, curates, and promotes excellent Jewish content and is funded in part by Next and Natan. If you have a halachic question you'd like answered on the show, email us at halacha@machonhadar.org. You can also leave us a voicemail at 215-297-4254.